ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli, and my guest today is Darcy Antonellis, an award-winning leader recognized for her innovations and impact in the media and entertainment technology space. As CEO of Vubiquity, a leading global provider of premium content services and technical solutions, Darcy works with content creators and distribution services to provide solutions that make content easily accessible to consumers on any platform. Darcy, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks, Gabriella.
There's recently been some really big news at Vubiquity. Amdocs is acquiring your firm. What can you share with us about this?
Yes, it's big news. We're delighted to be joining the Amdocs organization. Certainly, you know, it's obviously subject to close and all the appropriate, you know, regulatory clearances and so forth. I think what I can say is terrific news for us to come in as an interesting, you know, new asset into Amdocs, you know, bringing premium content to the broader service provider space.
Wonderful. So for listeners who aren't aware, could you explain, you know, sort of what Vubiquity is?
So Vubiquity is a premium content services and technology solutions company servicing media and entertainment industry. We sit really and kind of participate directly in between the content owners. We have relationships with over 600 premium content brands, and we aggregate their rights on their behalf for licensing to service providers. And those service providers are really video distributors, the consumer-facing services that we all use and consume premium content from. And that can be a cable provider, that can be an OTT provider, it can be a video service offered through a carrier. So across cable, telco, satellite, over the top, a service linked to consumer electronics. We're really a video distributor agnostic,
right?
And business model agnostic. And so it could be a subscription-based service, it could be a transactional-based service, or as we like to say, electronic sell-through, where you are buying a content to keep, which is often the case for digital content in the kids space.
Right.
So it could be ad-supported and so forth.
So it's software as a service. Is that essentially?
No. So we are a managed services provider. We don't license out our technology platforms.
Okay.
We provide access to our distribution platforms.
Okay.
And often provide managed services behind those.
Oh, okay. I see. So becoming the CEO of Vubiquity, and you had private equity funding, VC funding, and that was a big pivot for you, a veteran executive, decades experience in traditional media companies, both broadcast and studio. What was prompting the move from that end of things to this, to sit in the middle here? What was really the driving factor for you?
One of the driving factors for me to make the change was, first I was intrigued by the place and position that Vubiquity participated within the media and entertainment ecosystem, principally working with the content owners and the video distributors. Second, the company has had a reasonably long history working with the premium content community as a trusted partner, as well as working with a diverse set of video distributors or services providers. Today, we distribute into 120 countries and 80 languages. Having both an engineering and a business background, it seemed like it was an exciting kind of natural progression for me personally, and gave me the ability to continue working with fantastic executives across the studio landscape, as well as with relationships within the networks and the services providers. And so all of those things really, really contributed to making the move.
Right. Now, you mentioned your engineering background, and that really is very distinctive that you're a woman and you have this engineering background and you've achieved so much. You're actually one of the Wonder Women, multi-channel news, right, this year. Congratulations, by the way, for that. Very impressive. Do you use your engineering background? Does it come into play in terms of where you see opportunities, how you think about things, or is it just sort of part of your background?
No, I think, you know, being a technologist, being an engineer provides an interesting perspective on certainly around problem solving. Mm-hmm. And also to think about the possible. And right. I think where discipline needs to come into play is how to take that vision and bring it into robust and strong execution, you know, in practical ways.
Right.
So I would say that the skills that I've developed or or hope to have developed are greatly informed by my engineering roots.
Well, it's interesting, especially because now we, you know, with all the trends and everything moving, you know, box office revenue is down, linear television viewership is down, streaming, digital, mobile viewership is up, and these new platforms, these new ways of consuming media, engineers have designed. Engineers are engines behind this. How do you see, you know, the next 5 years playing out in the entertainment industry in terms of tech? And also, what competitors would you see on the horizon? Like blockchain, is that something to think mm-hmm. about? Is that part of the picture that you're, you know, that's on your radar?
Sure. You know, I think that the next 5 years, the next 10 years, I think we have to take a step back from how we think about video overall. And, mm-hmm. and while we've been, you know, we were significantly and primarily focused on media and entertainment, if you think about its use and utility, it is our form of communication, right? And so
right.
Video has taken a preeminent role in how human beings simply communicate. And I think that, you know, as the kind of the underlying thesis for certainly for our time, for the foreseeable future, presents tons of opportunities. You know, mm-hmm. we use, you know, in our company, we use the term, we support, you know, from OTT to IoT. And what's really intended to convey there is we want to be completely agnostic to what we expect to be continuing forms of the rendering and the display and the immersiveness of providing a video experience to an individual or to a group of individuals. And, you know, the business models around those different experiences are certainly going to be dynamic and continue to evolve. So if you mm-hmm. think about, you know, the next 5 years, there are lots of incredibly talented, well-capitalized companies that are doing, you know, some fantastic things that really incorporate video and its use so much more heavily into our, you know, into kind of every minute of our daily lives. And our view is to just make sure that the technologies and the platforms that we've built, and we actually took this into account as we thought about the future, is to be able to cater to however those models evolve.
Are you currently working with any Internet of Things companies to deliver video? Is that something that's...
Yeah. So, you know, we have our first in that category, and it's, you know, it's for delivery of content into automobiles.
Oh, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
Right. Which makes perfect sense as we think about self-driving cars and everything else. And so it's, you know, it's fun. It's exciting stuff. And if you think about certainly the incorporation of AR, you know, and VR options and spaces beyond, again, kind of the pure M&E opportunities, it's a pretty broad palette.
Well, automobiles, that's really interesting. Is that, so are these things that are in production? Is it, can you share a little bit more? is.
You know, the products are getting ready to launch. I'm not in the place to, you know, we're supporting the solutions provider that's working with the automobile manufacturer for the in-car experience.
Right.
You know, but it's, you can see the need, right?
It makes perfect sense. Well, and even before you have driverless cars, you have parents with children filled cars. Certainly, I remember the wonder of having a DVD player in the car. And I was like, this is amazing. And it sort of revolutionized, you know, put them in the car and I can have a conversation. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Dialing it back, though, back into media and entertainment space, how can networks and studios use technology to create critical mass on TV everywhere channels? And what are tech things that can be done to help prevent churn? That's something that people are always really concerned about. What part does tech play?
I think tech plays a really interesting role in, you know, kind of pointing back to some of the basics, right? So under the banner of the overall kind of user experience, how mm-hmm. easy can you kind of manage, get access to, consume, and manage your, let's just call it your content life, right?
Right.
And the management is really deals with, you know, being able to get exposed to, first off, get exposed to the things that to the genres and the types of content that kind of normally fit within your habits. But also, and I think, you know, this is where, ML and AI come into play, be able to get exposed to, you know, new forms of entertainment, new forms of content that might have an interesting adjacency to the things that you typically enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as much as we like to talk about it, if you think about brands and consumption, the average individual is still only, you know, cutting across roughly a dozen and a half or so properties a day. Right.
Right.
So keeping that in mind, you really want to make that time spent pretty meaningful.
Right. Right. What about tech related challenges like loading, buffering, crashing, freezing?
Yeah.
Are those things that are related to infrastructure, larger infrastructure issues? Are they the tech specific issues? What's behind those? And are they growing pains that are going to work out just because infrastructure is going to get better? Or is there something else behind that?
I think we've experienced that kind of through history, and we are experiencing that now. And, you know, if you think about, you know, 5G networks as one example, right?
Right.
So, you know, they are explicitly catering to, you know, a video centric kind of distribution model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the expectations are moving seamlessly or frictionlessly kind of, you know, between device, between locale, between geography is only going to continue to get easier and easier.
Right. Well, and how do you, at the same time as everything is moving and changing, because just as we get a handle on the size of files now, it's, you know, 4K, and then, you know, what's the next thing beyond 4K? Everything, right, exactly. It's just more and more richness. And so are they in step? Are they behind? Is it just, you know, well, we're just going to keep working it and eventually it'll all even out? I mean, can you even tell the difference? Can you really notice the difference in the quality of the picture?
Well, you know, starting with the basics, you know, we rapidly approach, and in the case of 4K, let's use 4K HDR, right? So high dynamic range. What that is, you know, in layman's terms, the color spectrum that will be provided on the display is much closer to what your eye can discern.
Right.
And until you see that, and you see the difference between that and what you have been watching on a display, you really don't understand what that means.
Right.
So progression towards what is humanly possible, and I'm going to put the caveat here, humanly possible without enhancement to our own human capabilities is kind of the first order of business, right? Let's drive to at least meet the thresholds of what human beings can, whether it's what they can hear, you know, so call it, up to 20K or thereabouts, 21K. So what they can humanly hear, and then obviously there's things we can do to improve that.
Right.
And what they can see with the human eye, and there's things we'll ultimately, you know, be doing to change that as well.
Well, I guess this explains why as an older person, I'm happy with everything the way it is, because my eyes and hearing are good. I can't see anything anyway. I have readers spread all over my house so I can pick things up. So shifting gears, I mean, some of that, some of the questioning had to do around the experience of things buffering or freezing. Yeah. And experience leads me to think about really the reason I connected with you way back in the summer was actually around piracy.
Right.
Because I had done some studies on piracy and what younger consumers were doing. And while you were at Warner Brothers, you headed up their anti-piracy division. And I guess at that time, torrenting, was that the most pressing piracy issue? And today it's streaming. Okay. What strategies did Warner Brothers use to monitor and combat piracy? And how do you see these things shifting as things move to streaming?
You know, the strategy that we had developed at the time was really kind of a multi-pronged approach. We didn't believe that a pure blunt instrument approach by way of enforcement was certainly the way to go. And I think we all learned from the lessons via the music industry.
Music, right.
The approach with, you know, amongst all of us, both on the commercial side and I would say the commercial side, the technology side, and the legal side was to combine some, you know, a robust set of, let's call it kind of security protocols that provided a good chain of custody and ownership to protect premium content. Mm-hmm. You know, first we had to do our own housekeeping internally. And then the next thing was, what were the requirements that we asked of our licensees to handle and protect the content? And there were then coupled with in parallel, you know, legislative pieces of work to reiterate the importance of content as IP and value of the create and the value to the U.S. economy that the creative industries and all of the support industries around, you know, around content creation and distribution to the U.S. economy and why IP protection was so important. And then, you know, and then additionally, there was thinking of piracy as simply another competitor. I think that, you know, if you treat it as a competitor, albeit it could be access to content for free, and that's what it was, or, you know, at a low price. The one thing that we knew and still today is probably more so have is the ability, we not only have the content first, but we have the best quality of that content first and have the ability to offer, you know, great experiences across different types of offers and pricing models.
Right. How much do you believe that price is what motivates the piracy versus access to content? I mean, do you think that price is really the sole motivator, the greatest motivator? What is your feeling about that?
No, and in every study that you look at, those are, you know, depending on the locale, those are number one and two respectively. So both access has a couple of things that it's dependent upon, not only rights and availability, but just the nuts and bolts of distributing, let's say, globally, but maybe it needs to be globally in a local language version. You know, that doesn't happen in a second. And while there's lots of different automation that you could try to use and you do use, you'll get the resultant quality of that use. And you know, the creative community, you know, would prefer that foreign language versions are properly dubbed or subtitled and that it's a quality product that's put out into international markets. So you have that, and on the pricing side, again, there's a high degree of elasticity depending on which market you're talking about, on where that, if that's, you know, the number one reason or the number two reason.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you foresee, you know, what with social media being very global, with the exception of some countries where they are sort of walled in, and people talking about things and spoiling plots and things like that, do you foresee, or do you think that people are going to start doing global releases of at least, you know, feature content?
Well, I mean, certainly there have been pretty aggressive progression down that path, you know, subject to the seasonal differences mm-hmm. in regions, right? That, you know, there are portions of the market where, in parts of Europe, for example, where large portions of the population are, you know, are out of country, or they're on holiday, right? It's considered a slower period of time. So subject to taking into account the, you know, those differences, mm-hmm. I think the content community is figuring out, okay, you know, how do we capture it? If nothing else, the ability to distribute, you know, globally in a relevant local market way.
Right. And we mentioned earlier, but didn't really trot down the lane, I'm curious about your thoughts around blockchain and how it might relate to entertainment.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting and certainly viable solution that could be, you know, that could incorporate, you know, cryptocurrencies for transactional uses as well as, you know, as well as content protection.
Mm-hmm. And also then another piece I'm curious about is voice technology, and how does, are you far enough away from the user that you don't have to consider voice, or is voice something that you have to consider in embedding in what you do?
Yeah, it's an area I would say that we've got some crazy ideas that we're kicking around on the boards here. I think voice is a fantastic, you know, facilitator and enabler, right? And companion to premium content.
Right.
Putting my own challenges alone when arguments with the likes of Alexa.
Yes, I agree there.
You know, yeah. Or let's
all invite a listening device into our house, shall we?
Right. No, I think, you know, voice absolutely does play a big role.
Well, what I find interesting about voice is the generational difference in comfort and adoption, and that what I'm seeing is Gen Zs are incredibly comfortable using voice. I mean, I had a really funny experience at the airport. I was at the airport, and there was a girl and she was maybe four, and her mother, and mm-hmm. she was being grumpy, and the mother was on her phone and not really paying attention. And the girl sort of looked around and then announced, "Alexa, I'm hungry." It's really funny.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Exactly. I thought, they don't make lunch yet, do they? You know, so it was interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of where we are, right?
Right. Well, and I think, for me, I think Internet of Things is, you know, undeniably there. I think the involvement of AI and machine learning is coming, and there's no debating it. There are various things where I just think they're happening, and understanding and integrating with them as people and as companies is something we just need to roll with a certain amount. And also understand that, you know, technology is agnostic in some ways in terms of how it behaves, and people maybe can misuse it, like with the social platforms, for instance. And so we just have to be aware of how we interact with things.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I do at the end of interviews is I toss out words and get people's top of mind first response. So it's just
okay.
So you're ready to do to do the game, okay?
All right, I'll try.
Facebook.
Family.
Google.
Everywhere.
Snapchat.
I was going to say I hope so, but keep going.
Twitter.
Trump.
YouTube.
Love it.
Ad blockers.
Yes and no.
Art.
Underappreciated.
VR.
Nascent.
AR.
Can't wait.
AI.
I would say nascent again. We're in the early days. Yep.
And the last thing is, what are you most excited about that's on the horizon?
I'm most excited about the definition. I mean, you know, the what IoT really means, and having, you know, being surrounded by smart devices and being within a smart environment, and all that's enabled by being connected and being able to do so much more simultaneously. And I think by virtue of that, just kind of being more connected overall, you know, people being more connected overall is really, you know, fascinating. And then I think in all of that is we're so early in all of it.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, Dorsey Antonellis. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.